Are you ready for the most ridiculous internet sports show you have ever seen? Welcome to React, home of the most outrageous and hilarious videos the web has to offer. So join me, Rocky Theus, and my co-host, Raiders Pro Bowl defensive end, Max Crosby, as we invite your favorite athletes, celebrities, influencers, entertainers in for an episode of games, laughs, and of course, the funniest reactions to the wildest web clips out there. Catch React on YouTube, and that is React, R-E-A-X-X. Don't miss it.
This podcast episode is brought to you by Coors Light. These days, everything is go, go, go. It's nonstop hustle all the time. Work, friends, family expect you to be on 24/7. Well, sometimes you just need to reach for a Coors Light because it's made to chill. Coors Light is cold lagered, cold filtered, and cold packaged. It's as crisp and refreshing as the Colorado Rockies. It is literally made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado.
The Hockey PDO Cast is brought to you by Get Down BP, which brings people together with a goal of getting blood pressure down in a fun and interactive way.
Regressing to the mean since 2015, it's the Hockey PDO Cast with your host, Dmitry Filipovich.
Welcome to the Hockey PDO Cast. My name is Dmitry Filipovich, and joining is my good buddy, Chris Johnson. Chris, what's going on, man?
Not too much, man. I would be remiss if I didn't start by wishing you a happy birthday, because I know Alex Pruitt did the same for me when he was on with you earlier this month. So we're Libras at arms. Or I guess you're not a Libra.
No, I'm a Scorpio, okay. Which I'm surprised you didn't know. I feel like whenever I meet someone, they point that out. I feel like I have the traits of a Scorpio, whatever that means.
I'm definitely a Libra, so there's something to that.
Yeah, well, we still get along. I'm glad you haven't forgotten about us since receiving your call up to the big leagues with the Hockey Night in Canada promotion. But then again, I mean, since it is my birthday, what kind of a monster would you be to say no to me today?
Exactly. I'll never say no to you. Never forget where you came from.
I appreciate that, CJ. We love you here. Okay, let's get right into the Matt Duchene trade. Because it's been, I guess, 48 hours or so now since it happened, and I'm glad we gave it a bit of extra time to marinate. You know, obviously in the it's 2017, and in the Twitter culture, you want to be the person who comes up with the wittiest takeaway or response as soon as something happens. But I think there's something to be said for, you know, reading as much as you can about it and giving it some thought, because there's a lot of more nuance to it than may initially appear. And I don't know, I guess a good place to start with this is with the Ottawa Senators side of things, just because we're going with the old adage that the team that gets the best player in the trade is the one that wins it. What do you think about this from the Senators' perspective?
Well, it's pretty clear that the price tag here was dictated by the Senators' pretty serious desire to get Matt Duchene. You know, I think that, you know, with a player of his name value that's been on the trade market as long as he has, there were a lot of teams that had varying levels of interest, but Ottawa and Pierre Dorion specifically were very fixated on getting him. And, you know, they've paid a pretty high premium, I think, to do so. You know, for them, they were pretty happy not to have to give up what they view as any of their best prospects in order to land Matt Duchene. But, you know, whether or not this is a success from the Senators' side is now banking all on Duchene in a couple ways. I mean, his performance this season immediately is obvious, but also, you know, whether they're able to sign him to a long-term extension, because, you know, he's got them in a pretty interesting negotiating place already, just knowing that they had to give up these assets to get him. And that, you know, he is an unrestricted free agent in the summer 2019.
Right. Yeah, he's not going to sneak under the radar. I mean, I guess that all for them and for this entire trade, really, what hinges is Matt Duchene an upgrade over Kyle Turris? And if so, is the difference between the two of them worth, you know, essentially two first round picks and a third? And I don't know, from the player perspective, I like Duchene quite a bit more as a talent. You know, we'll get into this when we discuss the Predator side of things in a couple minutes. But, you know, he's obviously younger. He plays faster. He's more dynamic offensively. And that's all stuff the Senators need an injection of in their lineup. But, you know, I think you wrote about this a bit, and it came up again in a lot of pieces I read on the trade. And there's also this element of flexibility it provides the Senators a little bit. It buys them that extra year, and you know, if they regress really hard and fall off the map completely, they can presumably flip Duchesne sometime between now and the and next year's trade deadline again before he expires. And it also lines up perfectly with his contract. It lines up perfectly with Erik Karlsson's expiring after next season, and obviously that's going to be a big big line of delineation for the Senators in determining where they're going in the future. So, I guess it, from that perspective, financially, it also makes a lot of sense for the Senators beyond just the on-ice perspective.
Well, and, you know, Matt Duchesne's an interesting player just in his own right. I mean, I find just from a few people I speak with, there's a pretty big divide in opinion on what he is and whether he is a first-line center. Certainly the Senators believe that. I think Guy Boucher has been very high on Duchesne, and that, you know, helped make the trade easier for his GM to make, knowing that the coach was willing to deploy him in a way that kind of makes this make sense from their perspective. But, you know, there are some out there that had their doubts about whether, you know, he truly is someone that you want to use in that position. And I think we're going to find out a little bit more because Ottawa is highly incentivized to do so. And, you know, he ticks some of the boxes. He's the NHL's best faceoff man, if you look at the last three seasons combined, which is obviously part of the job. But, you know, it's going to be I'm just fascinated to see how it turns out. I mean, it's one of the, you know, thanks to David Poile, we've had a few interesting trades the last few seasons right. in a league where we don't tend to see a ton. But I do think that it's kind of a point we draw a line, and now we can watch what happens and, you know, see how it goes. But it's still a bit of a gamble by Ottawa, but it makes sense to do so. I mean, we Erik Karlsson might be the number one PDO cast friendly player in the league. Yes. So, still having him hopefully in his prime. I mean, I think it's still a little early to see, you know, what he's going to be post that ankle injury he had last year. He's had a good start, but, you know, it's hard to know if he can log the minutes he's logged the last number of seasons and be as productive of tilting the ice as he has in the past. And you know, while you have a player like that, it makes sense to me to try to win. And, you know, in Ottawa's case, they've got to do so under certain budget restraints. And, you know, I think that played an aspect into what went on with this trade as well.
Yeah, definitely love Erik Karlsson. I'd be remiss if I didn't mention my boy Jean-Francois Berube as the PDO cast number one darling. The other day I was actually tweeting about him, and the Rockford Ice Hogs AHL affiliate of the Chicago Blackhawks account tweeted at me, and I'm almost positive it was actually Berube himself tweeting from that account, but I gotta mention him. So when I was thinking about this trade from a winners and losers perspective, which is how we tend to do this stuff, is Matt Duchesne the biggest winner of this trade out of all the teams and players involved?
I think so. I mean, look, this guy was miserable, and he only loosely hit it. I mean, we saw his picture on the opening day of training camp of, right. Those are tend to be like the promotional shots.
Looked slightly distraught.
And he looked like, man, someone had shot his dog. And, you know, look, part of that was that there was some discussion, you know, with Matt Duchesne and his agent, Pat Brisson, about whether he should even report to training camp. And, you know, ultimately they decided it was better to keep trying to play by the rules and you know, wait this thing out and have a decent start to the year. So I think, you know, to go almost a year from requesting a trade and, you know, last year playing on one of the worst teams of the salary cap era and, you know, to still then find yourself in that reality. I mean, to get this new lease on life is huge for him. And, you know, I think that perhaps there's something to be said that the change of scenery might help his game as well, because he didn't have a very good individual season last year with the Avalanche. He's been off to a good start this season, but you know, I think that he's going to see a bump in role, a bump in minutes, and you know, probably just with his own headspace, is probably in a better position to succeed now that he's been moved.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, we don't want to get into the business of psychoanalyzing too much, but it's pretty clear that you know, the past year or so haven't been very fun for him. And as everyone knows, if you're not in a work setting that, you know, you're enjoying, it can sometimes affect your performance. And, you know, for him especially, when I was looking at this from a numbers perspective, like, what really stands out is how much Kyle Turris benefited from just sharing the ice with Erik Karlsson a lot of the time. You know, when we often think about player performance intertwined, then we think about, you know, with or without your numbers and stuff like that. We typically think of defense partners, and then we think of forward lines, and we never really think of the forward defense combinations. And it makes sense. I mean, that's their top center and their top defenseman, and they both play a lot, so they share the ice a lot. But I believe it was like just under 50% of Tourist's 5-on-5 ice time over the past 4 or 5 years were all with Erik Karlsson. And, you know, if Duchene gets a heavy dose of that as well, I imagine, you know, he'll be happier, and the Senators will be happier with his individual production as well.
Exactly. And look, they're probably going to share a power play unit, I would think, as well, given that, that Karlsson at times plays almost the entire power play. So, you know, there should be an opportunity there for him to boost his production, and every player likes that, especially a guy a year and a half out from unrestricted free agency. You know, if he has a big shot forward here in points and gets back to where he was a couple of years ago, I mean, it's going to be good for his bank account and everything else. So, you know, this he probably is the biggest winner, you know, to be honest. And you know, it's interesting because you have two teams, very different teams, but built in their eyes to sort of win now. And that's, I think, what made this trade come together in the Predators and the Senators. But, you know, even if they go on and win, I don't think anyone is probably happier right now than Matt Duchene, just to put on a different jersey and have a different work environment.
Okay, so let's switch gears now to talk about those Predators. Yeah, I mean, Dave Poile really coming through for us here in the media with providing us with some stories and some stuff to talk about. It's amazing, especially that most of this stuff is just like good old-fashioned quote-unquote hockey trades, where it's like teams actually like players of consequence moving, and it being trades that, you know, you can make reason of for both teams, like especially with the, you know, the Ryan Johansson Seth Jones trade from the past and this one. And so it's kind of cool to see, because as you mentioned, we don't typically see too much of that in the NHL, particularly with the monkey wrench that that the hard salary cap throws into things and making it work for everyone. So the fact that Dave Poile keeps doing this is he's one of the big winners in my mind.
Well, and the fact that he's been an NHL GM for almost 40 years, you don't do that without having a lot of quote-unquote hockey qualities. And let's face it, one of those qualities is sort of loyalty and that idea of maybe being a little bit almost conservative in your approach. And, you know, trading Shea Weber back when he traded Weber for Subban kind of ran a little bit counterculture to what the sport is, I think, just because, you know, Weber was the captain there and you know, was a big part of the initial rise of that franchise from, you know, its sort of mediocre position when he was drafted. And, you know, that trade made a lot of sense for them on a cap perspective and a whole host of other reasons. And then he follows that up with Jones for Johansson. And, you know, I don't think they had any issue with Jones. They just felt that they could get by without him, that their blue line was strong enough. And I think with what we've seen since, they've been proven right, given that they went to the Stanley Cup last year and are still in that position. And you know, this is kind of born again out of some honest self-assessment that they needed a little bit more down the middle, that Johansson wouldn't be enough with what they had, even with the Nick Bonino signing in the offseason. And, you know, it's hard to fault them on this. Even if we were in agreement that Kyle Turris isn't Matt Duchene, that he's not is impactful. He is a little bit older. You know, they've had to extend him or chosen to extend him for 6 years beyond this one as part of this deal. I mean, to me, this sets them up better to compete when they get into the playoffs again. And, you know, it's too bad we didn't get to see last year's Stanley Cup without Ryan Johansson in it.
Right.
Just because I'm just curious how it might have went. I mean, clearly Pittsburgh still would have an advantage going head-to-head with Johansson and Turris and having Crosby and Malkin. But, you know, the margins would be much thinner with that kind of, you know, setup. And you know, to me, this makes sense for David Poile. I mean, once you start down this path and you're seeing, you know, a positive results on the ice and, you know, that team getting so close to a cup and being as experienced as he is and knowing he doesn't know how many years he's got left, I mean, it's they've got a window. And, you know, I think he did well. I mean, essentially his choice in this whole deal was, you know, he was after Duchene in the summer and even last year before the deadline. But he didn't feel like he could take any more today pieces away from his blue line and still have his team be as good as it is. So, you know, his choice was, you know, being able to deal some futures to get, you know, Matt Duchene light and Kyle Turris in this case. And, you know, that's kind of the decision he made. And you know, I think that you can probably make an argument that, you know, if he traded a Matias Ekholm, just to throw one name out there, and got Matt Duchene, that you know, maybe on the grand scheme, that doesn't help them be better than they are. So, you know, I like this deal for the Predators as well. You know, it's one of these ones, honestly, and it's not just sitting on the fence. I kind of like it for everybody. I think Ottawa took the biggest risk in of the three teams, but you know, it's hard to really nitpick with Nashville. I mean, unless Kyle Turris is a total disaster there, but you know, I still think at age 28, he's got enough to give in a second line center position that, you know, he's not going to make you regret this.
Yeah, that's the thing with Turris. You know, I actually like him quite a bit as a player, and I think he's a very, very solid second center. The 6 years is slightly concerning just because I think he will be 29 by the time that contract kicks in, and we know how sometimes guys' performance can deteriorate into their early 30s. But, I mean, that's sort of the price of doing business here, and at the $6 million cap hit, it's eminently reasonable. And listen, I mean, to Dave Boyle's credit, he's sort of put himself in this position of luxury where with some of the other great team-friendly contracts they've signed over the years, they can now start taking calculated risks like this, and that's an awesome place to be in as a GM. And you know, you mentioned this, but just looking at this team, I mean, and this and the result of this trade, they basically just added Kyle Turris without subtracting anything off of their 2017-18 roster. I know Sam Girard played a couple games for them, but when they're healthy, you presume he won't be a part of this year's team. And so, you know, a team that we already liked and thought should, you know, once again have cup aspirations, adding a player of that magnitude without subtracting anything it's pretty hard to get too down on it from that perspective.
Well, and let's not forget, they didn't give up their first round pick in the 2018 draft in this deal. And, you know, I'm led to believe that they're still willing to trade that at some point before this deadline to add further. So, you know, it's, you know, maybe Girard will make them regret this. You know, I know he was a player they really liked and was, you know, one that the Avalanche coveted pretty heavily, but you know, that's kind of part of this. And they still do have a few other, you know, well-touted young defensemen in their pipeline. So, you know, I think that they felt that they could take that risk to add, you know, for the next couple of years to keep the, you know, what should be, a, you know, I think it's, if this year doesn't work out their way, I still like their team for next year. They don't have that many question marks in you know, the next few years really to have a team that could win. And, you know, that's really all you can do as a GM, because at some point, you know, luck does play into this when you get into the playoffs, and you just have to kind of build the team that has the best chance to survive the bounces of the game.
Yeah, put yourself in a position to succeed and be one of those teams. Do you gather that Dave Poile, I guess he was trying pretty hard to actually be just, him and the Avs as dance partners and getting Matt Duchene himself, but I imagine that, you know, what the Avs were looking for and Duchene's contract uncertainty, I guess you can put it, were sort of what threw him off and got Ottawa into this in the first place?
Well, what changed here, really, the trade changed from the Avalanche standpoint. I mean, initially they were looking for quality in this deal. You know, they wanted a top four defenseman today, plus a prospect and a draft pick was the going rate at, you know, starting last January when they really began having talks on Matt Duchene. And I think over time, as they went through the various suitors, including one-on-one with Ottawa, one-on-one with Colorado, I know Columbus made a pretty strong pitch in the summer. I believe there were some talks with Carolina, but the Hurricanes decided it didn't make sense to remove one of their D and get a player that could be UFA in 18 months. You know, there was other teams. I heard the Rangers kicked around. I think Calgary had some conversations. I mean, they went down the laundry list of the possibilities and realized that the quality wasn't going to be what they thought was worth it. And that's where Joe Sakic was taking a lot of heat, is that, you know, what's he waiting for? He's not going to get a better deal. And what they ended up getting was quantity. And I think once that became a possibility, once they were dealing with two teams that felt like they could win, that they could give up future assets to try to get better today, that was the key to unlocking this deal. And, you know, from Nashville's perspective, I really don't think that they ever thought that they could give up one of their top four D. And, you know, when they were talking in the summer with the Avalanche, I believe that was the price that they were trying to pry Ekholm away from them. And, you know, they didn't want to give up Josie or Ryan Ellis, even, who's been out injured, or PK Subban. Mm-hmm. And, you know, if Colorado wasn't going to move off that, I mean, they just couldn't make that one-for-one deal. They didn't think it made sense to take away one of those players just to get Duchene. But, you know, there was some creativity involved. And I think from Colorado's aspect, the willingness to sort of change their price and, you know, basically get all future assets plus Andrew Hammond's contract. You know, that allowed this to happen. And, you know, you can understand Joe Sakic's thinking. I mean, now he's got six prospects or picks out of this deal that those can turn into other trades. You know, they don't all have to be lottery tickets for the Avalanche organization. And you know, I think given how long this dragged on and the fact that he tried so many avenues and failed with teams in a one-for-one swap, that you know, it's kind of a creative way to get what you need out of the deal and you know, still get this thing done.
Yeah. Yeah, well, and you know what? The impressive thing about this Predators team is, listen, CJ, I'm 26 years old today, so I'm old enough to remember the David Legwon years. And
right,
there was a long time there where, you know, they had the impressive blue line, and it was up front, it was incredibly thin. And I imagine that, you know, as someone who's been in the game for a long time and, you know, he was running this team since the beginning, I imagine Dave Poile also really just kind of sort of lusted, for lack of a better word, over, you know, getting some of this center depth and having this type of talent up front. And then now all of a sudden you look at this team and it's remarkable the facelift they've had as an organization over the past couple of years with a new coach and the new players and, you know, obviously last year's cup run and sort of the national audience realizing how fun of a hockey market Nashville is. And all of a sudden now you have this, you know, incredibly dynamic, fast team that can throw a bunch of different looks at you and is super deep. And I don't know, I just really like this Predators team. I hope that they're healthy, get healthier as the year goes along, because the West is pretty wide open right now, and I feel like they could once again make some serious noise.
Well, getting Philip Forsberg for Martin Irat helped. That's for sure.
That's
because
a good start.
I mean, you know, it's given them the kind of dynamic scoring touch that I don't know that they ever had. I mean, I know they had Paul Kariya late in his career, but Peter Forsberg, obviously, you know, on one of his final years when they made a big pitch for him. But, you know, to get a player that young that can score, you know, Victor Arvidsson's, you know, a pretty useful winger for them. I mean, they do. They have a lot more firepower than probably at any previous point in their history. I remember the night that they made that deal to get Ryan Johansson that, you know, David Poile was saying in the history of their franchise, which I believe was somewhere around 20 years at that point, that they'd never had a centerman, basically a true first-line center like Ryan Johansson. And you know, look, he's produced pretty well. I know Ryan Johansson has some doubters out there or you know, given the way his tenure went in Columbus, that maybe people didn't believe in him so much. But, you know, this is a pretty good way to build up your team when you're not drafting that center. I mean, that's the tough part. I mean, that's the sort of eternal question a team like Montreal faces right now is, How do they ever address that weakness and still have a competitive team unless they get lucky in the lottery? And, you know, it hasn't happened for them just yet. And, you know, Nashville's found a different way around it. It kind of reminds me a little bit what Dallas was able to do in getting Jason Spezza, Tyler Seguin in deals after Jim Neal took over that team. But, you know, it's a tough question for those that don't have it. And, you know, now I do think that they should have legitimate ambitions. I mean, they would have had them anyway. But, you know, going into most series, they're not going to be giving up too much, if anything, at center. And given how strong their blue line is and if the goaltending holds up, well, then they definitely have the ability to be back there in June. And I don't think there's a hockey writer or hockey fan out there other than those that care about one team that wouldn't mind seeing them make another run at it.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Okay, so finally, the Colorado Avalanche perspective here. I'm not going to list all the assets they got because this could go on all night, but they basically, I made this joke on Twitter, but they pretty much got an asset for every single extra month that they waited to make this trade since last year's trade deadline. And you know what? Credit to Joe Sakic, because it was very easy to make a lot of jokes and to be critical and wonder sort of what they were waiting for and if they were sabotaging this deal and if they were ruining Matt Duchene's trade value by waiting and, you know, dragging on this sort of miserable process for both parties. And I guess he ultimately knew what he was doing, and because it worked out pretty well for the Avalanche, just accruing all of these various assets that they can now either use themselves or flip down the road. And it's a pretty good sort of start. I mean, you know, it's not starting the rebuild because they've been doing this for a few years now, but it definitely helps expedite it a little bit, I feel like.
Oh, for sure. And you know, they really like Girard. I mean, look, he's going to play the first game Friday in Stockholm for the Avalanche. I think that'll be his sixth game, and you know, because they still have the option to send him back to the QMJHL. But you know, all the indications are he's going straight in the lineup and likely there to stay, unless he gives them any reason to believe that he can't handle that role. And you know, now they've accrued more draft picks, which is what I think you have to do. I mean, look, it seems to be essential to every sort of tear it down rebuild is that you need to be adding a ton of prospects to your pipeline. You're not going to hit on them all, but getting players that can push up and fill roles is you know, usually how good teams become great. And, you know, they're better positioned to do that now. And this was going to be a tough deal to make. I mean, I think Matt Duchene meant a lot to the Avalanche organization going back to when he was drafted third overall. That is usually tough to recoup. You know, he at one point was pointed to as the hope for the future of a better future. And that Avalanche team, you know, save for one really good year under Patrick Waugh, where they raised some hopes, you know, never really delivered on that promise. So you know, it's tough to get a lot back for that asset, or as much as he means to you, I think, you know, especially given that Duchene's 26, that there's some of those questions, as I mentioned out there, that not every person believes that he's, you know, the sort of guy you can slot in at number one center and feel good about, you know, how you're doing at that position. And, you know, given those constraints and the fact that the whole world knew that he wanted out and that he was miserable and that the team last year was terrible, you know, I think that this is a pretty good outcome for the Avs. Certainly a lot more than they got for Ryan O'Reilly in the deal that they had to make with Buffalo a couple of years ago when he was entering the last season of his contract. But, you know, their patience paid off here. I don't know if that's blind luck or whatever, cascading circumstances. Right. You know, the one thing I don't know, and, you know, trying to do some reporting on this trade, is I don't know who got it to the third team trade. You know, like how that sort of evolved precisely, right? Because, you know, from afar, it does look that was the key, that the fact that they had two teams that were willing to give up future assets for current ones. And you had Ottawa, you know, really since September, shopping tourists around to everybody who would listen. I think that clearly was the breakthrough to get all three teams to the table. But, you know, that worked out well for the Avalanche because, you know, as time went on, I would say they were less likely to get that quality they were looking for in a one-for-one kind of trade, just because he's getting closer to free agency and all those things. I mean, he was arguably more valuable as a trade chip before last year's deadline, when any acquiring team could at least be confident you'd have him for potentially three playoff runs before he was going to become an unrestricted free agent, before he had to be re-signed. But, you know, I think they did well here, and it worked out pretty well for Joe Sakic. And, you know, maybe some that were hard on him can we'll have to eat some crow over this one.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is as clear as it was that, you know, there wasn't going to be a resolution where Duchene and the Avs, you know, made up and Duchene would be there for the rest of his career. Like, it was pretty clear this trade was going to happen eventually. I guess they could operate from a position of power just because they did have that extra year on Duchene. So it wasn't like, you know, there was this ultimatum to move him by this deadline or they wouldn't get anything for him. And ultimately, Duchene is also a very good player, so there's a demand, of course, in the league. So, but he cashed in on that, and, you know, this is exactly the type of package that a team that's in their position should be going for. I think what stands out for me with the Avs now is, you know, if you spin this forward and wonder about what this team's going to look like in the years to come, it's this sort of financial flexibility. And, you know, there's a couple of things bolted down there. You know, there's Gabriel Landeskog and Nate MacKinnon and Eric Johnson and Tyson Barry, but pretty much beyond that, everyone is gone, or at least their contracts expire in the next couple seasons. And that can be a good or bad thing, obviously, depending on how you use that money and how you fill those rosters. But for now, there does seem like there's a bit of sort of hope, just because anything can really happen and you've got this kind of blank canvas and you can just imagine how it could come together if everything works out well.
Well, and if they get a good bounce of the lottery ball in the right draft, I mean, that could change everything too. One more impact player, maybe their own unquestioned first line center. You know, if they get an Austin Matthews type player or something in the future draft in the next few years, you know, that could be the last sort of piece that propels them to where they need to get back to being. And, you know, an underrated kind of aspect of this trade that I haven't seen discussed too much is, you know, there's kind of an interesting dynamic that's emerged with Turris and the Senators in the wake of this happening. And you know, perhaps one of the surprising parts of all this for me is that we got to this point and Turris is moving on from Ottawa, just because, you know, having been covering that team daily during the playoffs last year during their run, and seeing how valuable he was to it and how important he was in the community. A lot of stories coming out after he scored an overtime goal against the Rangers and went straight to a banquet for a kid's a handicapped kids program locally in Ottawa that he works with. That, you know, I'm just kind of surprised that he didn't get an extension there, that, you know, he was the player that they ended up moving. Good thing for all of us that like to see trades, because it wouldn't have probably happened if there wasn't that dynamic out there. But, you know, he seemed like the perfect fit on that team in that community. And, you know, something kind of went awry because you have Pierre Dorion talking at the Matt Duchene's welcome press conference that, you know, kind of saying, I think with some sour grapes, that 6-year extension was never something that the Senators felt Kyle was willing to do with them. And, you know, he countered on his media availability saying that, well, the Ottawa never offered a 6-year deal. And, you know, it's sort of I guess it gets overshadowed by everything else going on. But, you know, I would have, if we were doing a PDO cast a month ago, or maybe a little longer, because, you know, his name was already out there by end of September. But in the summer, you know, I would have guessed that he was a good candidate to sign a long extension in Ottawa. And, you know, I guess he moves on. We'll see if he wins a cup in Nashville.
Yeah. I think I read those comments where he was asked himself, like, how this extension came together so quickly with Nashville and why that didn't happen in Ottawa. And he basically, you know, he didn't mince his words. He just said that it was never really on the table from the Senators' perspective. So I guess that settles that. But, you know, fun trade all around. I agree with you. It sounds like we're sort of riding the fence, but I really don't think we are. I mean, it seems like all three teams improved in terms of what they're looking for or how they fancy themselves at this point in time as a franchise. And it's intriguing at the very least from all three perspectives. So I'm kind of curious to see, looking back at it in hindsight in the years to come, what we think of it. CJ, let's take a quick break here to hear from a sponsor, and we'll pick up the PDO cast on the other side of things. Before we get back to the conversation with CJ, let's chat a bit about the lovely sponsors that make bringing this show to you possible. Buying tickets to sporting events and concerts can be time-consuming and complicated, but it doesn't need to be, because there's a better, simpler way to do it, and that's with SeatGeek. And that's because they really do all the heavy lifting for you. They scour the web, comparing multiple ticket sites, finding the best deals out there for you. Then they even take it a step further by grading those deals based on value for you with an easily digestible color-coded system so that you know what to pick. And you can rest assured knowing that what you're paying for is what you're getting, because everything is guaranteed. To get in on this deal, all you have to do is download the SeatGeek app, enter the promo code PDO, and you'll get $20 off your first ticket purchase. That's promo code PDO for the 20 easiest dollars you'll ever get your hands on. Be like Philly McCheese 28, who sent me a picture of himself at the Flyers game over the weekend. He seemed to be having a blast, and you could be too. The only problem is that he then had to watch the Flyers, and I can't imagine that was good for his blood pressure. You're probably thinking, Dimitri, what does that have to do with anything? Well, loyal listener, brand synergy. Because the PDO cast also has a new sponsor in Get Down PD, who are trying to bring everyone together with the goal of getting blood pressure down in a fun and interactive way. The reality is that anyone can develop high blood pressure, and in fact, 7.5 million Canadians live with hypertension every day alone, so it's a real thing. To join the community and learn more about it, go to getdownbp.ca and get started. Now, let's get back to Chris Johnson. All right, so before we get out of here, let's talk a bit about sort of what we can look forward to now, because it feels like this was the big sort of domino to fall, and we were all waiting for this trade to happen. What do you think is the next thing that we're going to all be sort of shifting our attention to or focusing on, or which teams are going to kind of start feeling the pressure to get feisty and sort of get the itchy trigger fingers to make a trade themselves?
Well, it's hard to not think that John Tavares is going to at some point become the focal point of the conversation around the league. And you know, it's been a bit under the radar, I think, because at this point, John Tavares hasn't indicated an unwillingness to sign with the Islanders. So there's still some hope from the organization's perspective that you know, he'll be signing a long-term deal and sticking around, you know, if they can sell him on the future that they have for the franchise, you know, off the ice, probably even more importantly so than on the ice. But that will be, I don't know when that's going to erupt, but that volcano is simmering, you know, quietly beneath the surface right now. You know, in terms of other players that could be on the move, I think Evander Kane is an interesting name that will probably take on a little bit more prominence as we go along here. And, you know, I also look at a team like Columbus, you know, which is probably the team that was most interested in Matt Duchene other than Ottawa and Nashville, and you know, wasn't able to get anything done. You know, I wonder what they're going to do, because they're off to a, you know, a strong start themselves. I think that they have reason to believe that they are at least a small C contender in the Eastern Conference at this point, and probably even a little bit more than that. And, you know, they clearly feel that they have some needs at center ice, you know, if they can find the right deal. So I don't think that this is the end of the possibility of big trades. But, you know, it's almost like everyone has to take a collective breath, because, you know, I don't see anybody moving in the next month. I mean, you never know. You could be surprised, but it doesn't seem as though there's as pressing of a situation as you had with both Turris and Duchene with their former teams to sort of create the conditions to make that kind of move here in the short term.
So I'm glad you brought up John Tavares, because I don't know if this would necessarily ultimately change his decision to resign, or the Islanders' decision to try and get something for him if they get the feeling that he's going to walk before the deadline. But one thing I've really been fascinated by as a development over the past couple of weeks has been the emergence of Matt Barzal. And the reason I bring this up is because watching this Islanders team now, I really do feel like, you know, not as maybe the vibe, but I feel like the trajectory or my expectations for them this season have changed quite noticeably, just because you watch this team now and all of a sudden they have the second line with Barzal and Eberle that's firing on all cylinders, and they're just so much better. And I wonder if, you know, John Tavares looks at that and realizes that all of a sudden now he's got sort of a legitimate running mate, and he's got secondary scoring help, and maybe the Islanders can make something of this season, and all of a sudden that might make him more willing or more excited about the Islanders' future and might make him stay there. So I don't know. I'm kind of curious to see if that actually is, you know, just a 15 game blip in the radar, or if there's something more to this moving forward.
Well, it certainly doesn't hurt, because you know a priority
for John Tavares is winning. And I don't think there's any question about that. And lots of players say that, and I think that maybe you can wonder how true it is, or if it's something that's supposed to be said. You know, I know this guy well enough to know that he's the sort of player that's thinking about, you know, one day being in the Hall of Fame. You know, what does he have to do in his career to be, you know, receive the ultimate recognitions that this sport can possibly have? And look, he's made tremendous sacrifices throughout his whole life. He's playing the Ontario Hockey League at age 15. You know, this is what he's about, and this is a huge decision for him, you know, where he's going to play the next 7 to 8 years, because, you know, they might ultimately be the final, at least in terms of him as a top player, stretch of his career. And, you know, there's also been some developments with the arena, where everything does seem to be on pretty good track. I think they'll find out in the new year, you know, whether they are able to develop the land at Belmont, where they want to build a new rink. And I think that could be just as key to these discussions. But, you know, it's going to be fascinating. I mean, Barzal has made the Islanders better in the moment. There's just no question about it. You see him doing that nice little dance on Edmonton in the game last night. Inside, inside, outside, inside.
On Clefbaum, too, who's actually a good defenseman.
Right. It was... I know that doesn't... It just showcases some of the skill the guy has. He wasn't able to score. But, you know, I think that there's at least a little bit more for him to think about. You know, if they had started the year, not even the way Arizona has, but even if they had started, you know, 5-9 or something like this, and they were already kind of out of the playoff race, you know, it's going to get tougher to convince him to stick around, I believe. But, you know, if they are as competitive as it looks they might be, and that there's a bit of future hope, and that the organization's in a good place... You know, he's also a pretty loyal man, John. So, you know, it's going to be interesting. I think it's similar to the Stamkos situation, just because they're first overall picks and roughly the same age. But, you know, I think it's quite different because of some of the emotional ties here that are going to factor into the decision, you know, from John Tavares' end. And you know, I don't know that anyone truly knows what he's thinking on this one, or what the Islanders are thinking. But, you know, if they fall back out of playoff contention by February 26th, and they don't believe they're going to re-sign him, I mean, there's always a possibility they're moving him, and that would be some kind of trade. We'll need two PDO casts to go over whatever that ends up being, if it, you know, were it to happen.
might even be a three-parter. Yeah, you know what? God bless the Islanders fans. I love whenever, you know, even if I'm doing a podcast about something completely different, and then there's like a 3-minute segment about John Tavares.
Yep.
You can count on like that to be sort of plucked from the podcast and transcribed, and then like blogs be written about what we said about it, even though we're just kind of having fun with it. We're not actually reporting anything, but I love that sort of enthusiasm and passion, and you really see that with this whole Tavares story when it comes to Islanders fans sort of protecting their turf.
Well, and he's been their one shining hope, really, the last 7-8 years, and you know, even the 1 year they get to the second round there, he was one who scored the overtime or double overtime winner. I mean, this guy's meant everything to the franchise, and you know, that hasn't been an easy team to support over the years. I don't think that's any secret, given, you know, how crappy they've been for most of it. But, you know, any relative prosperity they've had has all been tied to him. And so to see him leave would be difficult as a fan, I'm sure. And, you know, I don't know that he is going to leave. I don't really know how this is going to play out. I think so much of it is still fluid and up for grabs. It's not like where you kind of think deep down the decision's been made and it's just time running its course. I actually believe that there's moving parts here that are significant and weighing on what he's going to do. And you know, it doesn't hurt at all if he's having fun at the rink and seeing someone like Matt Barzal emerge as a teammate that can help shoulder the load offensively. And you know, if they're doing well, I do think that the odds of him staying go up.
Yeah. Okay. So one final thing. I have 4 teams here that I have sort of written down in, or I guess mentally I've written down as teams that could make sort of a panic reactionary trade, because obviously the start of the season hasn't gone the way they'd hoped for. And those are the Oilers, the Rangers, the Ducks, and the Wild. And the last two are unfortunately mostly due to injuries. And especially with the Ducks, I'm not sure, like, you know, cap wise, if they could really even do anything. They just might have to bite the bullet and wait until Getzlaff and Kessler come back. But I feel like, you know, the Oilers and the Rangers in particular seem sort of poised to do something, because there's been a lot of rumblings right now. Like, do you think we could see anything there?
Yeah, I do. I would add Montreal to your list too.
Right.
And I know that they've won just a little stretch of games here and gotten themselves back to out of sort of the crisis they seem to be in 2 weeks ago. But, you know, that's a team to me that has to react for the now as well. And if they lose 3 more and they're 7-10, you know, from when we're talking now, like, I could still see them being among them. I mean, the Rangers are interesting because, to me, they seem to be kind of tilting on the edge of really blowing it up or you know, contemplating some even more significant moves after trading Derek Stepan in the summer. You know, I they seem very motivated to reimagine what they are at this point, and that probably makes some sense given what we've seen and, you know, where Henrik Lundqvist appears to be, and you know, just kind of might have run the course with the core of the team that, you know, played a lot of playoff games in the last number of years, but wasn't able to get over the top. You know, Edmonton, man, what do you do if you're Edmonton? I mean, they have to be doing everything they can to have the best possible team for this season. You know, they feel that they need to add up front a little bit more speed, especially, I think, and you know, that could be a tough trade to make. The reason I add Montreal is there seems to be kind of a nice little triangle going between the Habs, Rangers, and Oilers in terms of some rumored, you know, moves. And I wonder if two of those teams, I'm not saying it'll be a three-way deal at the end, are able to hook up. You know, Elliot Friedman connected Kreider to the Oilers. You know, I think Galchenyuk is still a possibility for Montreal here at some point to move. And, you know, maybe the Rangers would have some interest there. I mean, they do have some holes down the middle. You know, those teams have, I think that they have the formula to potentially do something drastic. You know, I was in Anaheim about a week ago, and, you know, my sense with the Ducks is that they're going to try to ride this thing out. I mean, there might be a smaller move in their future. You know, it's since then, of course, they found out that Getzlaff's out 2 months. You know, at that point, I don't believe they thought it was that serious. They had to wait for the swelling to go down before they knew how bad things were. But, you know, they seem inclined to me anyway to try to get through this. I mean, the one thing that, you know, a few people there were mentioning is that they view their situation as slightly different than Tampa last year, because their expectations are going to get all these guys back, in and around Christmas time, and that if they can kind of stay above water until then, that they maybe won't see a lost season because of it. I guess the next question is, what happens if they lose five in a row and it appears they're taking on water? Then maybe that's where your desperation trade comes in. In the Wild, I mean, geez, another team that's just had more than a share of injuries, and what we'll see if Chuck Fletcher is inclined to act. But I do think the three most desperate anyway is Edmonton, the Rangers, and Montreal, or the possibilities of maybe doing something emotional.
Yeah, Mount Bruce is erupting these days. I mean, I watched that Ducks game last night against the Kings, which was actually a really good game, and I'm surprised by how competitive the Ducks were in it, forcing it into overtime and actually, holding their ground. But, man, I don't know. Their top two centers are Derek Grant and Chris Wagner right now, and I'm not sure how long that's a feasible solution for them, so we'll see. All right, CJ, let's... I'll let you go here. I know you're a busy man. I appreciate you taking the time to come chat. I'll be in your neck of the woods in Toronto at the end of the month, so maybe we'll get around to sitting face to face again in the same room and maybe recording another show together.
That would be great. That'd be really good. You know what? One thing I forgot, we didn't mention the doomsday scenario built into the Duchesne tourist trade that I think has to at least be aired, since people got a little deep dive on it.
Okay.
If, and this is a huge if, Ottawa were to miss the playoffs and it becomes a top 10 pick, then the first rounder they sent to Colorado becomes a 2019 pick with no conditions on it.
Right.
And, imagine if that then became a top pick, if Ottawa really fell off. I mean, it's unlikely.
Oh, yeah.
You got to feel like with Erik Karlsson in your lineup alone, you're not going to be in the hunt for number one overall pick. But, that's where there's some risk built in if things go wrong. And no one ever expects this. It reminds me to cite one from way back, the Kessel trade that the Leafs made at the time when they thought that they were on the up and up with Brian Burke, and one of the first round picks became number two overall and Tyler Seguin. So you never know what could happen. There's still that could have a surprising outcome still yet.
Absolutely. Yeah, that's a good point. All right, CJ, get out of here.
Okay,
and we'll talk to you.
See you soon,
the
pal.
Hockey PDO Cast with Dmitry Filipovich. Follow on Twitter at Dim Filipovich and on SoundCloud at soundcloud.com/hockeypdocast.